And we basically, this is kind of an extension of the last guest in the conversation, because we were talking about energy and resources and farmland and all the things that America is blessed with. And then I look back at all the things that America has done with its, you know, land grant universities like Michigan State University or Montana State and everything in between, and where we've created drought-resistant, pest-resistant crops, increased yields, huge increases in production since just 1980, using less energy to produce more food every day in America. And then the big attack now from the left over the last handful of years, GMOs, genetically modified organisms, which are corn that grows even when it doesn't rain and beans that produce even when there's pests. You know, and I don't think a little kid sitting in Africa who is just praying for food is too concerned whether it's a GMO in his bowl or something else. H. Sterling Burnett, Ph.D., is a Heartland Research Fellow on Environmental Policy. Doctor, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on again.
Now, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has blocked three measures from Kauai, Maui, and the Big Island of Hawaii that would have banned or placed a moratorium on the use of genetically modified organisms and crops and seeds, but that would be virtually impossible at this point, I believe. I mean, Michigan State and Ohio State and Minnesota, all these universities, they've done this for 100 years, manipulating and creating, and there's no evidence that I'm aware of, sir, that these are dangerous for anybody. Am I right or wrong?
No, you're right. There's been no scientific evidence. Every major scientific body that's ever looked at the issue and all the the research that's been published in credible journals has never found an instance where GMO food has harmed the environment or human health. They are the people who are scared of GMO foods are the same people who say that vaccines are causing autism. It's just they're putting people's lives at risk over unfounded fears. And concerning they could have certainly stopped the growing of those crops in Hawaii, but they can't stop the growing of those crops worldwide. They're in our foods. They are in our cattle feed and our livestock feed. For some crops, they're 75 to 80% of the crop production.
So tell me about this. You know, I mean, I'm right when I say that, you know, crops can produce more today when it doesn't rain than they could in 1980 when it did rain. And I know this not because of something I read. I know this because I talked to friends of mine that are farmers, and they tell me that in 1985 they would produce this many bushels in an ideal year, and in a drought year now they produce significantly more even when it doesn't rain. And that's the real difference, and that's why it's such a positive thing for our country, for the world, really.
Well, different crops have been modified in different ways to produce under different conditions. So some crops have been modified to produce greater yield even in dry conditions, like you say. Other crops have been modified to resist pesticides. So when you add your pesticides, it doesn't kill the crops as well as the weeds that you're targeting or the other pests, the insects that you're targeting. Other crops have been modified to have more, more natural pesticides, so you don't have to apply pesticides, and then
that's right
for the environment. So, you know, some of them are modified to last longer on the shelf. So when you pick
In fact,
them,
I heard this stat, and maybe you can help me with this, doctor, because we're with H. Sterling Burnett from the Heartland Institute Research Fellow there. Here's what I was told by a farmer. He said more than 90% of all pesticides on plants and food crops are naturally occurring.
Oh, plants.
Yeah, I mean, does that make sense?
Plants evolved. Yeah, no, of course. Plants have evolved to have their own pesticides to resist insects and disease. Just like we have white blood cells to fight disease, well, plants have evolved their own mechanisms to resist insects. What we do with our modern applications of pesticides is enhance those abilities.
Exactly right. So let me ask you this, because it seems pretty irrational, a lot of these conversations, right, about GMOs. It seems like it's a lot of emotion and not a lot of fact driving those conversations on the left. But how do we drive home the idea so that folks can understand that genetically modified organisms, it's not Frankenstein corn. It's not Frankenstein, Frankenfood or whatever they call it, which is simple nonsense. And again, you look at the kid in Africa who's just glad to have a bowl of rice. He doesn't care. But how do we get this message home that, you know, Michigan State University, University of Minnesota, Ohio State, Florida State, Montana State, these are all colleges that have studied this real science for well over a century that's safe. How do we get people to accept the message?
Well, you know, some people I think will never accept the message because they're just fearful of anything that they don't personally understand. But the vast majority of the public, I think, already accepts these crops. One way to get the message home is just to tell people how ubiquitous they are. I mean, that for two decades now, they've been eating foods that have contained genetically modified organisms in them. That if they eat corn, if they eat corn chips, they've eaten genetically modified organisms. If they eat
because you can't avoid it, you know, which brings me to mind. The Chipotle restaurant chain had said, we're going to go completely GMO-free, blah, 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 and found out they couldn't do it. They had to pull the signs down because it was nice and cute in their boardroom, but as a practical matter, it wasn't possible.
Because they don't control the sorting of the corn. They can't control their source. And if they were to go GMO-free, it would be possible, but not for a major chain like that because there's not enough corn produced to satisfy their demand.
That's right. And the corn yields would be so low, the price would be so high, it would be unfeasible from a couple of different directions. Got to leave it there for today, though, and I greatly appreciate always bringing clarity to the conversation, Doctor, as you do. And we'll continue to follow this and learn more. But, you know, if it sounds out of touch and emotional, probably is. You ought to rely on science, sir. And I greatly appreciate you stopping in.
Appreciate you having me on. Take care.
H. Sterling Burnett, PhD, Heartland Research Fellow on the Environmental Policy and Managing Editor of Environment and Climate News. Environment and Climate News. Look that one up because you're going to learn some things you wouldn't find elsewhere. 52 after on a Tuesday, you're listening to The Steve Gruber Show.